I was just thinking, I hope I don't get too academic for you today, but when I find something that I find provocative, particularly something spiritually focused that makes me think in new and different ways, I get excited. Maybe that's why I love the Big Bang Theory. It's very nerdly, but what can I say? I'm going to miss that program, I must say. At any rate, over the last several weeks leading up to Easter, which is just a few weeks away, Reverend Mike and I have been exploring various aspects of this person, Jesus, hopefully to discover some more insight, more understanding possibly, more connection, because this is a person who changed history, and yet there's very little written about him. So we've approached the subject of Jesus from a whole bunch of different angles. Jesus as a healer, Jesus as a Jew and looking into the culture that formed him and the teachings, Jesus the rabbi in terms of what he taught and how he taught, Jesus the Messiah, our expectations of what that Messiah should be. And everyone, of course, had their own expectations. Did he fulfill them? Did he not? Jesus the Zealot, someone who upsets the status quo, and he very definitely did that. And today I want to share just another outlook, another insight into who or what Jesus was and about the message that he brought. I need to give you a little backstory. I have to tell you about a brilliant man I came across years ago, and I just love his readings and his writings. His name was Howard Thurman, and he was a contemporary who died in 1981. He was a minister, a teacher, a philosopher, a theologian. He was a writer and a mystic, and probably one of the most influential African-American religious thinkers of our 20th century. He was an amazing man. He was known both nationally and internationally. And in 1953, he was invited to be the dean of chapel at Boston University. Now, if you're old enough to go back to the 1950s, that was unheard of for an African-American to be in any position of notoriety or power. He was a professor of theology. He was a very multifaceted individual. And in 1944, he became the co-pastor of a newly formed Church of Fellowship of All People in San Francisco. And it was a truly, first time truly interracial church in this country. So, here's Howard Thurman, this brilliant individual, much acclaimed. And in his mid-30s, he had a seminal experience, and he was forced to re-examine his religion and his faith. And I'll let him tell his story in his own words. He says, in the fall of 1935, I was serving as chairman of a delegation sent on a pilgrimage of friendship from students of America to the students of India, Burma, and Ceylon. And at that meeting in Ceylon, there was a very crucial issue that came up and was pointed up to him in a way that he can never forget. And it changed his life. It changed his writings. At the close of a talk before the law college on civil disabilities, I was invited by the principal to have coffee in his office. And so as they drank coffee in silence, after the service had been removed, he said, "What are you doing here? I know what the newspapers say about a pilgrimage of friendship and the rest, but that's not my question. What are you doing here? More than 300 years ago, your forefathers were taken from the western coast of Africa as slaves. The people who dealt in the slave traffic were Christians." He's saying this now to a Christian minister. "One of your famous Christian hymn writers, Sir John Newton, made his money from the sale of slaves to the New World. He's a man who wrote Amazing Grace. There may be others, but these are the only ones I know of," the man said. The name of one of the famous British slave vessels was Jesus. The men who brought the slaves were Christians. Christian ministers, quoting the Christian apostle Paul, gave the sanction to religion to the system of slavery. Some 70 years or more ago, you were freed by a man who is not a professing Christian, but was rather a spearhead of certain political and economic forces. During that period, since you've lived in a Christian nation in which you are segregated, lynched, and burned, I wonder why you're here. Even in the church, I understand there's segregation. One of my students who went to your country sent me a clipping telling me about a Christian church in which the regular Sunday worship was interrupted so that you could go and join a mob against one of your fellows who happened to be black. "I'm a Hindu," the man said. "I do not understand. Here you are in my country, standing deep within the Christian faith and tradition. I do not wish to seem rude, but sir, I think you are a traitor to all darker people of the earth. I'm wondering what you, an intelligent man, can say in defense of your position." Howard Thurman goes on to say, "Our subsequent conversation lasted for more than 5 hours. The clue to my own discussion with this probing, honest, sympathetic Hindu is found in my interpretation of the meaning of the religion of Jesus." Now, we've heard, we've been taught lots of interpretations of the message of Jesus, what it is, what it's all about, what it's supposed to mean. But for Howard Thurman, he came to the realization there is a real distinction between mainline Christianity, what we're taught in most conservative beliefs, and what he felt the real religion of Jesus was all about. And he wrote a book called Jesus and the Disinherited. It's about interpreting the life and teachings of Jesus, as Howard says, for those who stand with their backs against the wall. What message does Jesus' teachings have for the masses of people, the poor, the forgotten, the oppressed, the enslaved, the persecuted, the suffering? Oh, we talk about charity, but that's not what he's talking about. He's saying to those people who are in that position, whose backs are against the wall, what does Jesus' message, what does the Christian faith have for them? What does our message say to them? What tools for living does it give in a world where culture and values and mores are anything but spirit nurturing, more like soul deadening? Yeah. He came to the conclusion that the religion of Jesus was rooted in three things. Number one, seems kind of obvious, Jesus was a Jew. We've talked a little bit about that on other Sundays. Jesus came from a long history of Jews being persecuted and dominated. He was a Jew of Palestine when he went about his father's business. The second thing Howard Thurman points out is that Jesus was a poor Jew. And we know this because if we read these little bits and pieces from Scripture, we find that when he was presented in the temple, Mary offered a couple doves. That was a poor person's offering to the temple as opposed to a sheep or a larger animal. And so being poor is significant to Howard Thurman, because he said it placed him with the majority of people in our world, poor. And he said the third thing about Jesus that we need to understand is that he was a minority group in the midst of a large, dominant, controlling group, the Romans. They had covered the whole Mediterranean that we know of, and they were not very gentle rulers. Roman domination meant persecution, taxes, huge shifts in their way of life, foreign temples, foreign gods, mass executions. It was a very oppressive regime. Now, there are some facts that we have. He was a Jew, he was a poor Jew, he was a minority, but that doesn't explain everything about Jesus. As Thurman says, how do you explain a spiritual genius? He says, we need to make a few assumptions. It's reasonable to assume that Jesus lived under this domination and saw his fellow Jews suffer physically and culturally and religiously. They had little status, little autonomy, little freedom. And Howard sums up Jesus' message by saying he really feels that Jesus' message to those poor and oppressed and enslaved people was that no external force can destroy a people if it does not first destroy the spirit of the people. He was very attuned to the effects of this type of domination and oppression. And so he was smart enough to realize soul work and how one feels inside is incredibly important. Going back to Howard's work, he says, to the Jews, Rome was the enemy. Absolutely, because the Jews were not free to do what they want, when they wanted, and where they wanted. Rome was a symbol of total frustration. They collected taxes. They told people what to do, what to plant. Rome had presented many great barriers to their peace of mind. And Rome was everywhere. You couldn't get away from them. They controlled everything. Is there a Rome in our lives, someone that's controlling us, someone that's stopping us from doing what we want, what we dream, what is soul fulfilling in our lives? We may not feel oppressed, we may not feel enslaved, but is there a force or a person out there or conditions that are like Rome, that feels like the enemy, that maybe gives us total frustration, that presents a barrier to our minds? There might be something in this message from Jesus that Howard Thurman is uncovering that may work for us. For that Jewish minority of Jesus' time, you had two alternatives in this oppressive regime. You could resist, and that led to more violence. We have stories of the Zealots. We have stories of Masada, where people basically resisted Rome and ended up being slaughtered. Or you can not resist, this idea of non-resistance. So what does non-resistance look like in an oppressive regime? Well, you can imitate the oppressor. The problem is you start losing your culture. You start losing your personal way of life. Or you can reduce your contact with them. Well, that isn't always possible. So if you can't reduce your contact with the oppressor, then you have to have really rigid control when you're dealing with them. Well, that doesn't work really well either. But Howard Thurman is saying he really feels that Jesus came up with another way of dealing with this particular situation. When Jesus said, the kingdom of heaven is within. The kingdom of heaven is within. The joy, the peace, the ease is within you. Well, that's kind of hard to do. You've got all this stuff going on around you. Hard teaching, you know, I imagine his listeners really resented that. It's kind of like, where's that powerful motivational message, Jesus? Yeah, I'm sure they felt somewhat betrayed, suffering under the enemy. But Jesus' message was recognizing that anyone who permits another person, under whatever conditions, to determine the quality of our inner life, if we give that power to them to determine our inner life, we basically have given them the keys to our destiny, and we've given our power away. So Howard really felt that the essence of this message that Jesus came to bring to his fellow Jews was about controlling that inner being, that inner thinking, that inner ease that we're trying to perpetuate. It's our reactions to things that determines how much power someone has over us. I talked about, was it last week or the week before, how Martha Sweet always used to say, what you think of me is none of my business. Basically, what she was saying is, knowing whatever you're thinking is a projection of you, I don't have to absorb that. I don't have to give away my power by buying into that. And that's what Howard is saying that Jesus is telling his followers. He felt it was the solution Jesus found for himself and his fellow Jews. He believed that this movement that became Christianity began in the mind of this Jewish teacher, living and surviving under oppression. And with this idea that the kingdom of heaven is within you, it gave all of his followers tools to move through life and have some ease and peace. Howard felt that out of a climate of deep insecurity, that it's possible to establish a basis for well-being, and that it's possible to establish inner peace. Well, how does Howard come up with that idea? Well, if we look at Jesus' teachings, you know, he talks on the Sermon on the Mount, blessed are the meek, blessed are the poor in spirit, blessed are the peacemakers. Okay. He goes on to say, you've heard it said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, but I tell you, do not resist the evil person. He's saying, do not be resistant, be non-resistant. Because in resistance, you're blocking your inner peace. There's a saying, he says, if a soldier, a Roman soldier, asks you to go 1 mile with them, go two, and you just kind of go, what's that all about? Why does he even say that? Well, there was a law on the books that if a Roman soldier with all his gear was going somewhere, he had the right to ask a Jew to carry his gear and walk 1 mile with him. And then the person could put down all of the belongings. And what Jesus is saying, don't just do one, go and carry the bundle for 2 miles. I'm sure the Roman soldier will be going, what in the heck is he doing? He's supposed to begrudge me that. He's supposed to be irritated. I have power over him to make him do such a thing. And what Jesus is saying, you know, if you have to do one, do two. Because it changes your attitude. It changes your attitude to this form of domination and oppression. This Roman soldier is your nemesis. Probably wonder why you're so pleasant carrying this, because you've set your mindset to go that extra mile. Like they say, love your enemies, it'll drive them crazy because they won't know what the heck you're up to. The result is, if you meet the other person where he is, and then treat him as if he were where he ought to be, everything changes. Is he going to be immediately converted to your way of thought? Not necessarily. But you know how when you greet someone and you're angry or impatient, that anger and impatience comes back at you, and then probably they're angry and impatient with the next person they meet? If we meet the other person where they are and then treat him as if he were where he ought to be, everything shifts. Is that easy? Even Jesus' disciples said, this is a hard teaching. And lots of those disciples left. If it were easy, all of us wouldn't have to be here today. We'd all be ascended because our halos would be shining. But it's an interesting thing to think about. Where do you want that person emotionally and physically and spiritually? Where do you want them to be? And start treating them that way. It's like that old study that was done in grade school of they separated kids, you know, smart kids and not so smart kids. And they didn't tell the teachers, you know, that they were part of this experiment. And they told the teachers that the smart kids were really a little remedial and that the slower kids were really the brightest, the best and the brightest in the school. And funny thing, at the end of the year, these kids that were supposedly not so bright were doing all kinds of amazing creative things. And the ones that were really quite bright were feeling quite stilted. Treat people where you want them to be, and they tend to live up to that. Unity teaches about the power of denials. You know, in metaphysical thought, we say, you know, when you're in any situation that's not dealing well with us, all we have to do is say, this situation, this person, this event has no power over me. Only power I give it. It reminds us not to give our power away. And that there's only one power and one presence in the universe. And that power is in me, is in you. Whatever's going on in our lives has no power over you except the power you give it. I want to give you a quote from Howard Thurman in closing. He says, Jesus recognized that anyone who permits another to determine the quality of his inner life gives into the hands of the other the keys to his or her destiny. So, who or what is holding you captive? Who or what is determining the quality of your inner life? Has someone or have some old tapes caused us to give up our power? Jesus, our way shower's message to us, according to Howard Thurman, is if that's what's going on in your life, take back your power, because the kingdom of heaven is within you.